Smoke lifted from the charred timbers where once the house had stood, and curled wistfully in memory of the great barn Moffat had built to store hay and grain against the coming winters. The corral bars were down and the saddle stock had been run off. Where Dick Moffat's homestead had been that morning, there was now only desolation, emptiness, and death. Dick Moffat lay sprawled on the hard-packed earth of his barnyard, the earth deeply clawed in the agony of death. Even from where he sat on the long-legged buckskin, the man known as Trent could see Moffat had been shot at least 6 times. 3 bullets had gone in from the front, the other 3 fired directly into his back by a man who stood over him. And Dick Moffat had been unarmed. The small green valley lay still in the lazy afternoon sun, a faint heat emanating from the burned timbers. So this was the way a dream ended. Dick Moffat had sold a good business back east to try his luck at stock raising in the far west, something for which he had longed since boyhood. The man who called himself Trent walked his horse slowly around the burned-out farm. 4 or 5 men had come here, one of them riding a horse with a split right rear hoof. They had shot Moffat down, then burned his layout. Yet where were his children? What about Sally Crane, who was 16, and young Jack Moffat, who was but 14? There was no evidence of them here, and although the killers might have taken Sally away, they would undoubtedly have killed Jack. There were no other bodies, nor were there any recent tracks of the children. Those that remained and could be distinguished at all were several days old. Thoughtfully, Trent turned away. The buckskin knew the way they turned was toward home and quickened his pace. There were 5 miles to go, 5 miles of rugged trails through mountains and heavy timber, and with no clear trail. For this was the way of the man called Trent, that he leave no definite trail wherever he went. And each time he came or went from his mountain hideaway, he used a different route, so far as was possible. He did not expect to be trailed by anyone at this time, but then many a good man was now dead who had not expected to be followed. This could be it. Always, of course, he had known the day would come, for trouble had a way of seeking him out, try as he would to avoid it. For too many months now, everything had gone too well. The rains had come when needed, the grass had grown tall, his few cattle were growing fat. When in town, he had completed his business and bought his supplies, then returned home. Of course, there had been rumors that King Bill Hale climbed the high meadows, and there was surprise that he had not moved to drive them out. Slightly more than a year ago, he had moved into this high green valley and built his cabin. He found no cattle ranging there, nor signs of them, nor were there sheep. It was a high, lonely place, and the places the others had chosen were much the same, although lower down than his own place. No drifting cowpunchers came this high, and only rarely a lion or bear hunter. His only neighbors were other nesters like himself, Moffat, the Hatfields, O'Hara, Smithers, and a scattering of others. In the vicinity of Cedar Bluff, there was but one ranch, one and only one. On that ranch, and in the town, one man ruled supreme. He rode with majesty, and when he walked, he strode with the step of kings. He never went out unattended, and he permitted no man to address him unless he chose to speak first. He issued orders and bestowed favors like an eastern potentate, and if there were those who chose to dispute his authority, he crushed them without hesitation. With some, the pressure of his disfavor was enough. With others, he simply offered them a price, and their choice was simple: sell out or be forced out. King Bill Hale had come west as a boy, and even then he was possessed of capital. In Texas, he bought cattle, hired the best available men, and drove his herd to Kansas, where he sold at a handsome profit. He learned to fight and to use a gun, and that often a man had to fight to hold what was his. He learned to drive a bargain that was tight and cruel, and to despise weakness. He saw the strong survive and the weak fail, and he determined then to be not only strong, but strongest. He had come to Cedar Bluff, which was on the ragged edge of nowhere, and he drove off those who peddled whiskey to the Indians and the cattle rustlers who used it as a hideout. He drove off the few Indians in the area, and when one honest rancher refused to sell, Hale promptly reduced his offer to half, then bought the one supply store and refused credit. When that was not sufficient, he refused to do business with the rancher under any conditions. Cedar Bluff and Cedar Valley lived under the eye of King Bill Hale, a strong man and an able one. His ranch prospered, his trading post did well, and he built the Cedar Hotel, a gambling house and saloon he called the Mecca, and then he started a stage line. He owned 60,000 acres of good grazing land, which he had bought for prices ranging from a few cents to a dollar an acre. He controlled, by virtue of holding all accessible water, at least 100,000 more acres. He had, aside from enough inherited money to begin at the top, almost unbelievable luck. Of the three trail drives he made to Kansas, not one stampeded. The weather was always good, and the Indians far away. King Bill Hale, however, did not believe in good fortune, and was sure he possessed some inherent quality that accounted for his success. He had been astute, but so had others. He had come along at a time when the cattle business was booming, and even some stupid men were making money as a result. He bought beef cattle in Texas for $3 or $4 a head, and sold them in Kansas for $28 to $35. In a chancy business where stampedes could scatter cattle all over the range, and where lack of good grazing and water could turn them to little more than hide and hair, he had experienced only success. Now that he was surrounded by those whose success depended upon him, he was free with his money and favors granted, and harsh to all who were not subservient. He thought of himself as a good man, and would have been shocked at the implication of anything otherwise. Those not as successful as himself were saddle tramps, nesters, or those who worked for him, who were tolerated, if not praised. Whenever he rode out, he had tough, hard-scaled Pete Shaw, an excellent cattleman who rode for the brand, and his son, Cub Hale. Behind them trailed the so-called Gold Dust twins, Dunn and Ravitz, gunmen.